Welcome to the Volunteer Youth Worker Podcast. Youth ministries rise and fall on the volunteers. So we are here to encourage and equip you. Join the conversation as we tackle the practical questions you are asking so you can help the next generation know Jesus.
Welcome back to the Volunteer Youth Worker Podcast. This is Jeremy hosting today's conversation and the interview with Brett Ullman. Brett, how are you feeling today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, it's always fun to chat with you. And we've had you on the podcast a few different times. And so certainly some folks will recognize your voice from there. But why don't you give a short introduction just in case maybe today is somebody's first time hearing our podcast. And so they need to know who Brett Ullman is. Maybe they're coming from Israel. I had a listener the other day email me from Israel asking about policies, actually, as it relates to the youth ministry, which I was like, I don't know how much of this applies. But so introduce yourself for our Canadian and our international audience. Brett, who are you?
Sure. My name is Brett Ullman. I live just east, I would say Toronto, but for Canadians, I'm not in Toronto. I'm 45 minutes east of Toronto, but I live in a town called Ajax, which you just mentioned Israel. No one knows where Ajax is. So I've been a speaker now for, COVID's messed up all my timing. I think I'm at 24, maybe 25 years. And part of that, I was a teacher. I taught with the Toronto District School Board, the public school board, for about 9 or maybe 10 years before moving into this full time. So now I speak. I'm an author. Basically, though, through COVID, I've done, can I say Zooming? Can Zoom be a verb?
I think so. I haven't checked that out somewhere, but Zooming, I think, is a thing. Yeah.
But I've done a lot more Zoom. I'm excited more and more as in-person speaking comes back. There's just something about being able to read an audience and see the nods, or even if seeing someone's confused or if they're upset by what you say and you can, you know, reiterate it a different way. When I'm staring at a dot on a computer and no one has their cameras on, it's funny. Odd. Like I finished a talk and I come downstairs and my wife goes, how was it? And I'm like, I don't know.
Like yeah, I really,
it's because there's no, the best part of speaking to me is after, when people come up and there's conversation and even a bit of discourse and stuff.
I was going to say that because the way, and because you and I have talked lots before, I know you have a large number of people that interact with you after the fact. And so a lot of times some of the, you know, you infuse some of those conversations into future content and future talks. And so it's always amazing when you're talking about how many, you know, teenagers or youth workers or pastors are reaching out to you by email after the fact or talk to you after a talk about some of these topics. And it kind of helps enlighten even what's going on in people's minds as they're hearing you discuss the different conversations. And obviously today is gonna be one of them. So tell people at your busiest year, just to put it in perspective, you say you're a speaker, lots of people want to be speakers. In your busiest year, how many talks would you give going back? I don't know how many years ago it would have been.
Well, it's interesting because we recorded a mental health talk first. So my busiest year, I was doing 275 to 300 speaking dates a year while doing a master's degree in Chicago, but then had a breakdown. So
yeah.
Unsustainable. That was a season I was needing to speak more. Speaking kind of grew, but I'm an international student suddenly, even though for me, it's only a short hour-long flight. So I was speaking a stupid amount of speaking dates and everyone I knew told me to not, but in that moment I had to. So normal for me is about 125, 150.
Yeah, that's fair. And you've been talking for so long around a number of really critical topics. And so, well, obviously, we're going to link a ton of stuff in the show notes. We'll link your website so people can check out your different talks. And you've been speaking about, and maybe one of the first times that I saw you spoke was on media, faith, and culture. And this has been something that you would have researched. And what can you guess how long ago the first time you delivered that talk would have been?
Well, my first media talk was the first talk I ever did.
There you go.
When I began, I went down to, there's a music festival called Kingdom Bound in Buffalo, which I'm really sad Buffalo's out of the playoffs as a side note, but that's another
call. Out of which playoffs? The football playoffs?
Yeah, they lost.
Oh, man. We didn't talk about this beforehand, but my stepdad was in Kansas City for that game. My sister lives in Tulsa. Sorry, this is an aside and sorry for all you listeners, but my sister lives in Tulsa. So he was visiting there and he's like, oh my goodness, this could be like a chance just to see a playoff game. And it turned into like the football playoff game. And he was in the stadium, you know, with wonderful seats. So anyways, crazy game.
Best game I've ever watched. So,
but we digress.
Back to the conversation.
Yes, yes, yes.
But I was at an event called Kingdom Bound, heard a guy speak on media, and I grew up very traditional, like Baptist, don't dance, drink, and smoke. If you ask why, like it's because, like I there was never conversations. And so I heard a guy speak, and it wasn't like everything Christian good, everything secular bad. It was just a really good conversation. So I came back, and this is what I do, my ministry kind of began. I did a few talks at my church, but media, and then I was doing a thing called True Lies for a while. I was kind of affiliated with a guy in the US, and it really wasn't me. It was similar, but we were very different. Mm-hmm. And then I created my first media faith culture. So that's been out for probably, that's a good question, quite a while. Now it's a talk that's always been changing and growing, but looking at media, looking at your idea of a worldview, your worldview shapes your values shape your actions. And then the idea of engaging the culture, which I still think is a really important one. You know, that we as Christians, like as youth workers, we want our kids to graduate and then go be in every job. Like we need, from teachers, nurses, to people running a Subway restaurant, to driving truck, like we need Christians everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And so when you prepare for these talks, give people a sense on just the breadth of preparation you have for them. And then as you change them, so you're changing this media talk kind of right now. So you're in the midst of rewriting and reimagining. And so what's the preparation look like for you?
So everyone's like, it's funny, like there's no template for a speaker. We're all unique. I'm not a preacher. I'm a teacher. Now we could really have a debate there. Does preaching teach? Does teaching preach? Yes. But like my giftings are teaching. And so every once in a while, I call it, I blow up a talk. Like literally, it's not like one thing I do every time I speak is I have to change at least one slide in a talk. It keeps it always current. There's always something new of what I'm reading or what's going on in the news. But right now I'm taking my media faith culture and I'm literally not throwing it away. I'm starting from scratch. And so I just began reading. And so I have an older book called Media Faith Culture. And when I brought up my new book on parenting, like my wife and I are kind of talking like, do I even keep selling it? Like it's 10 years, maybe 11 years old. And the world's changed dramatically. Like I use the word iPod in the book. But like, you know what I mean? Like we laugh, like no one uses the word iPod.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Like it's just completely changed. And even the picture on the front is kind of one of those phones that you'd push forward with your, like it had a screen still, but and also questions change. Like I try to read the room of what parents are asking. Like after I do a media talk and parents are asking me questions and I'm like, I didn't cover that. Mm. When do I get a phone? How much screen time? These are questions parents want. And like, maybe my talk needs to be just on media. So what I do is I start, I take a manila folder, I write media on it, and I begin to, I print off things because there's so much information and I have folders and digital stuff, but I just start everything I can find, I start putting in. So there were a few books that I was reading and I go back. So I'm a huge, like I love Kindle. So I went on my Kindle and I made a shelf and I took every media book I think I have about 1,200 books on my Kindle. Every book that I think might be part of this talk, and I drop it in. And then if I've already read them, for some of them I reread. For some, what I love about Kindle is I can go and find all my highlights mm-hmm. and print it all off, you know, staple it together, and there's that book. And so I went through the Walt Mueller books I have, and then I went through Tim Elmore. And it's funny in the middle, like last week I reread Brené Brown's Rising Strong. And someone might say, well, that has nothing to do with tech. And I'm like, but part of it does. Like these are the offshoots that I'm trying to figure out. You know, and she had a great line talking to her daughter about technology in the middle. And that's why I'd starred that. Mm. And then each book I read gives me new books. And then every time I buy a Kindle book, it starts offering me other books. And how many have I read? I'm probably at 25 right now for this new talk. Now, when I say that, I also need to be honest. Like, I forget who, someone once said this once and it was brilliant. Not every book deserves to be read cover to cover. Mm. it's an interesting line. So I'm reading a book right now called The Art of Screen Time. I forget the girl's name. Phenomenal book. And I'm reading it literally page by page. Like I'm underlining. It's just so much underlining. And there's other books that three chapters in, you're like, okay. Like either it comes with a really deep bias that I'm kind of like, okay, this book is more political, or it has an agenda of some sort to it. And that can be any political stripe you want. And other books just start repeating the same thing. And so I'm kind of in this, I'm still reading, but now I'm starting to create. So I take the best quotes now and I'm putting them into a, I'm a Mac guy. So I put them in a Keynote document and I start kind of moving things around. And I actually love this. Like I said to my wife the other day, I wish, like I'm in school taking my master's in counseling and I wish I wasn't, because I would love right now to spend 8 hours a day. Because this is my, from a creating standpoint, I get to create a unique conversation on media. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping out for the summer, but I'm excited as I kind of build it right now.
Oh, yeah. And we're going to link so that people know they can get in touch with you. And this is just a spark to the conversation, but you obviously will have just a ton as a part of that talk, and people can bring you in for that. The question I want to wrestle with today that people kind of get from the episode title is, what should youth workers know about the changing technology landscape or the changing media landscape? And the reason for that is because obviously you've been thinking about this over the last couple of decades. And so for us as youth workers, whether we've been doing this for, you know, 2 weeks or 2 months or, you know, 20 years, we're recognizing that, hey, the teenagers that we're working with today are struggling and dealing with different things than those, perhaps, maybe, I guess I don't want to preemptively answer the question, but there's just new realities in our world. And so what should we actually pay attention to as youth workers? We can't pay attention to everything. We can't know what the next song is that's going to hit, you know, number one on iTunes or on Apple Music or Spotify. And we can't know exactly what an NFT is. And we can't be able to just, like, we can't know everything about crypto. So, like, what do we need to know as youth workers? What should we be paying attention to in your mind, Brett?
It's funny. This is a 100% different direction. But as a youth worker, the biggest thing I would pay attention to is building the relationships of our kids to their parents and who they work with. Like, and parents could be, you know, if, I mean, there's foster kids, there's so much types of parenting today, but like building that relationship, because I think tech's just become, is the word ubiquitous? Like it's just part of every aspect of life, but we don't think about it. I love tech. Like, so like it's, you want the newest software, you want the newest things, but we never think about how it affects us. And I wrote, the last chapter of my book was on loneliness. And a lot of the conversation went back to the Malcolm Gladwell, the medium is the message. It went back to these, how does tech change us? And you can see how tech's changed us. You look at, I mean, you take, if you have a grade 12 in your youth group, look at their lifetime. And like, you know, banking, we don't go to banks anymore. We just deposit checks through phones. By the way, one of my favorite things that I get to do is I don't have to drive to a bank.
Yeah.
But what I miss there is human contact. I'm not standing in line. I don't get a chance to say my teller, Deb. And I knew Deb 15 years. So like, I don't get to see her and ask her how her family is. And the same is with restaurants. We just Uber Eats. The same is with movies. We just do Netflix. But we don't drive to the movie theater and pick up friends and go see a movie. And then, you know, afterwards go out for wings. And so I just think it's important to acknowledge that tech changes us, and it's important to understand there's good and there's bad with these things. And I kind of went off topic there, but I just think it's important to acknowledge that. But going back, building relationships with our kids to have conversations on these things and trying to walk through these things together. Like everything I'm learning in my master's is about it's collaborative with your client. And I think it's the same with with the kids we work with. And for parents working with their kids, like we're all in this together. I don't like that statement, but we are. And so how can we walk through this with our kids?
So rather than know what the kid is dealing with or what the kid is into in terms of the technology. Like instead of going in front of them, just journey with them as they're experiencing it, being able to ask them questions about, hey, what are you into? And so you might, you know, people that are listening, if you've got teenagers that are like super into crypto and NFTs or whatever it might be, like you might now need to actually ask them like, where can I learn a bit about this? Or look it up on Wikipedia. But if you don't have any kids that are into it, what you're saying, Brett, is like, oh, it's not actually necessary.
But those are really like crypto's funny. Crypto was the biggest thing. Everything I'd see on social media was crypto. It was a lot of teenagers. I don't hear that anymore because crypto is tanked, like brutally tanked. And I know a lot of people who lost university savings. So like the idea that everyone's going to like 100 or 1,000x your money, we as adults know that world. And I say it doesn't exist. And then someone would say, well, look what I did with my YouTube channel. Look what I did with an NFT. For the most part, everyone's not 1,000 timesing their money by throwing it in Shib Inu or Bitcoin. Like, and they've all tanked. I read about a family in the US who sold all of their assets and put everything in Bitcoin.
Oh, man. At what dollar value?
And that's the question. Like, because it was going up and going up and going up, but now it's gone down. Like, it's gone down by half or something.
Yeah. So, which at time of recording, I mean, maybe it went to the moon by the time this drops. Maybe it completely went off the face of the earth. We have no idea.
But with all this, I find crypto, like, it's interesting. I like finance. I think NFTs, And I like blockchain conversations. I was at a conference the other year. Oh, which was it? What's the tech? What's the Christian tech group?
The Christian
James tech Kelly.
Oh, I don't actually know.
Oh, anyways, I'll send you the link. But it's kind of, they do these hackathons and it's all positive stuff. But there was this a guy came and spoke on blockchain and how it can help, you know, reduce sex trafficking and other things. I think that's really great. And NFTs, I mean, NFTs are just little images. And I mean, but here, you know, it's funny. I say it sarcastically and I roll my eyes. I think NFTs are dumb. I do not think they're the future. I think blockchain's the future. Mm-hmm. But I would never say to a kid who loves NFTs anything other than, tell me why you love it. Mm-hmm. And again, this is the learning what our kids are into. And I mean, if they're creating online, and this is one thing I'm learning, it's the positive aspects which we have to increase and the negative decrease with technology. So if they're creating NFTs and putting them online, they're creating accounts, they're using Canva, Adobe, whatever, to create things. They're part of a community. They're on TikTok or YouTube learning how to post and try to make money. They're taking that money, which might be crypto. Like, this is all really good stuff that kids are learning. These are great skills. They're not just online, right? It's not just scrolling through things. They're using technology for positive things. It's kind of like this old, we always have this old view of computers. You know, it's kind of like people addicted. They're in a dark room doing nothing, just on a computer. It's like, there's really great things tech are helping and kids can learn and create their own channels and stuff these days.
Okay. Let me pivot the question then just a little bit. If you, if we go back to like the traditional things that we used to think about, and when I was in youth group, music, you know, movies, TV shows, is there anything that as things change that we should be watching as youth workers, or do we take that same approach where we just kind of find out what our students are interested in? And I guess the example is I remember at one point, you know, maybe some people would have said like, hey, you should know like what the top 40 songs are, which used to be a thing, obviously is a little different now. And so like, should youth workers know, and this is already going to date us, but like who Billie Eilish is and what she sings about and what her values are, should they know what Squid Game was and like understand what kids were watching in that regard? Does that matter as much, or is there a better approach that we can take as youth workers? What's your thoughts?
I mean, my first answer is yes. You should know what kids are into. But at the same time, when you're sitting with a kid and saying, how is your week? That kid doesn't care if you've ever watched Squid Games or not. Hmm. So it's a both and conversation. Like if you love kids and you're talking to kids and involved in their lives, they know that you're older and you might not connect with everything, but how much better can you connect when you understand the world they're living in today? Like when we grew up, movies, you know, these were restricted movies. This kids don't even talk in this language. It's just, you just watch stuff these days. Netflix is filled with a mix of wonderful shows to softcore porn to Squid Games. And I mean, Squid Games was a brilliantly filmed, fascinating movie, which was so unbelievably violent. And so I always think it's important to know. And I've always promoted, I mean, there's, you don't need to just suddenly go online and find here's where culture is. I mean, there are great organizations that do this for us. I mean, Walt Mueller, the CPYU, Center for Parent and Youth Understanding, you know, Common Sense Media, Axis has their culture translator, which is an amazing thing each week, translating kids speak to adult speak. I have a funny story with that. I'm writing my chapter on drugs and alcohol, and we're sitting around the kitchen table, and I said to my kids, so no one smokes anymore, right? And they both went, almost everyone smokes. And I'm like, no. And my daughter interrupts and says, what do you think smoking is? Interesting. I'm a little irked. Like, you know, kind of like, how dare you ask me what? And I'm like, cigarettes. And she said, oh, we're talking about weed.
Interesting.
And I took a big breath and I'm like, wow, like things change. And it's so important that if I know, like, if you're sitting around as a youth worker and your kids are talking about someone smoking, you probably need to know the difference between weed and cigarettes, because they're vastly different. And so this is where it's good to know what's in culture today. And even to know, like, Billie Eilish is a huge singer today. Some of your kids will love her, some of your kids won't. But it's okay. You don't need to know every song and every word, but just to understand, oh, there's Billie Eilish. Oh, yeah, and there's a documentary that came out, you know, with her career that's been pretty big. Like, it's just another way to connect with kids.
So when you say it's another way to connect with kids, it again makes me think of, you know, being able to say to youth leaders, hey, as everything changes, you can just react to what your kids are into. So I want to be careful. I don't want to put words in your mouth, Brett, but as I'm listening to you, I'm like, oh yeah, I wonder if I don't have to try to search it out. I just have to be curious when I'm meeting with the teenagers that I actually care about, which are the ones that are in my ministry, you know, the ones in my small group. And if I'm curious enough and they start bringing up that they're listening to this artist or they're watching this show, then maybe as a youth leader, just to be able to engage in the conversation, I should Google it later and just, you know, check out the Wikipedia page, learn a little bit more about it to be able to engage the conversation more. But it's not like we have to have a thumb on the pulse of what's happening before even our teenagers do. Is that fair, or am I off base, or I'm putting words in your mouth?
It's funny because you can argue that from either direction. It's funny. I think we should know. I would encourage every youth worker to sign up for email. Like, I think getting an email from Center for Parent Youth Understanding and Culture Translator and Common Sense Media and, like, Tim Elmore, like, anyone who has, like, you should fill social media and fill your inbox with really great content saying, here's where the culture is today. And if it's a busy week and you delete all of those, doesn't matter. But when you have a few minutes and you can check and see where the culture's going, but at the same time, when you're at youth, hey, what are you guys watching right now? You know, what's your favorite video game? Tell me what you like about it. Like, it's fascinating to get the answers for those things. Because I think, like, we assume it's always bad. But when you ask what they like about things, like, no one's watching Squid Games for the violence. I think we're watching it because it's a really unique show. And then I think people watch it because everyone else is watching it. So they feel that they have to know what's going on.
Okay. So as we're kind of coming to a close here, I want to drop a teaser for your talk. And I actually don't know the answer to this question, but will you in your talk wrestle with the question on content walls? And what I mean by that is that I grew up in the world of, like, hey, you shouldn't go watch an R-rated movie. You shouldn't, you know, put this type of, you know, music or whatever it might be into your head, because the more you put negative things in your mind, that changes how you think and how you view the world and all that kind of stuff. So that's what I grew up with. I know a lot of people have pushed back against that kind of culture, where it's a form of, like, purity culture. And they're like, that's obviously oppressive and evil and bad. At the same time, there was I think kernels of truth in there. And at least for me personally, I've appreciated maybe a bit of that conscience, if that is the right way to say it, even if it came with some of the negatives you had to wrestle through. So do you wrestle with that in your talk? Will you have an answer on, should you let a middle school student watch a mature rated show on Netflix? You don't have to give the answer now. I just want to know if you're going to answer it in the talk.
I am. I want to walk through that, but I don't, like, again, what I'm learning with, as I create this talk, is I'm calling it a talk of tensions, because there's, everything is nuanced. Yeah. Everything. Like when you say mature, I don't know if you and your wife have been watching Netflix. There's a few times my wife and I have been, oh, it's a mature one. And we're like, let's just check it out, because everything's not the same anymore. There's sometimes we watch an MA one, and like it used to be there was restricted, and then there was this kind of not rated or MA. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, that means there's a ton of nudity or extreme violence or something else. And then it was like, no, those were R movies, like your Wolf of Wall Street, that have very graphic nudity or things. There's a few times I've started watching something with my wife and we're like, why is this restricted? Mm. Like there's no nudity. There's no, there's nothing in it that I would find, the content, the topics might be bigger topics. You know, maybe there is discussion on suicide or self-harm or mm-hmm. all these other kind of conversations in it. But I don't know, like, there are PG things that I don't want my kids to see.
Right.
When they were younger. Because, so, it's not as simple as what rating it is.
Yeah.
And this goes back to what I really want to do in this media talk, is not just teach youth workers, but especially parents, on how to equip our kids. How do we equip our kids so that they, there's a quote from Tim Elmore that says, it's the job of every child to tear down his parents' fences and build their own. Mm. That's like, how do we teach? It shouldn't be a parent saying you shouldn't be on your Xbox or PS. I say PS5, it's hard to get. PS4, so we'll go back one. but like, how do we teach kids? If you're on a PS like 5 for 10 hours on a Saturday, how is that helping you get to any of your goals in life?
Yeah.
Because it most likely is not. And so how do we have them go and understand? And I use the rocks analogy. Have you ever heard that before? Like the big rocks, the middle rocks, the little rocks. Like mm-hmm. put in the big rocks. Like, this is one of the things, is using to teach to kids, like, do the big things first, right? This is your, you know, in-person, face-to-face contact. It is your faith. It is your exercise, getting good night's sleeps, which sleep is a paramount thing we rarely speak about. And then there's the other things we do. I mean, school is in that. And then there's the smaller rocks, which might be chores or things. But, like, playing a video game and scrolling through TikTok is the sand. And so you do that with your spare time. So how do we teach kids how to have the right priorities, which push them to their goals?
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess, again, we're not answering the question in this thing. This will be, you should talk, you know, bring Brett in, but I wrestle with, and it's, and I was like, oh, what's the verse on that? So it's like Romans 2:15, that they show that the work of the law is written on their hearts while their conscience bears mm-hmm. witness. And just this concept of like, where, how can we develop the right conscience, within ourselves? Obviously, I preach myself first, but then even for our teenagers, so that as they interact with the world around them, that they may not be entertained by, you know, sinful or carnal things, but that they could find. Anyways, it's a big conversation. So I'm glad you're reading a lot of books and you're going to answer that question. As we wrap up here for today, obviously thinking about the changing landscape, I like this thought. I like this bottom line, that we would grab a few things. We'll link those emails in the show notes so that you can subscribe as a youth worker. You'll get a couple things just brought to you so you can have some quick, easy access, things to digest about media and technology, culture, and then be curious about your teenagers in your small group. I think that's great advice, and I'm grateful that you've got that for us, Brett. Any last words before we wrap up today?
This is such a, like, we could talk for 5 hours on this. I'd love to hear from youth workers their thoughts too, like, you know, whether they write in comments or contact you or me. Like, these are things that we want to know how to best, like, we both work with youth workers. I want to know how I can best help a youth worker in this conversation. And I think the best way is helping their parents, which in turn helps and equips them as well. But I think they're just I would just encourage youth workers with this, is that you can do all this. Like, depending on your age, like I'm 50, I am a much older generation. And I know there's youth workers who are at every age and stage. So if you're a 24-year-old youth worker, this is really easy. You may be creating your own, what's the term, minting your own NFTs, and you think the metaverse is the future. Like, and you can easily connect with your kids. And there's others of us who are like, the meta what? Like, I don't understand what that is. But no matter what it is that we take a heart and a posture of learning and looking at how we, from a biblical worldview, can help connect our kids and equip and empower our kids and our parents to be successful in these conversations, right? And so I think, like, we're going to film another conversation where we're going to talk a bit more in detail about stuff, but I just wouldn't say, like, have a posture of learning and ask. I love the curiosity conversation. Ask kids questions and you'll find they just love talking about what matters to them. I'm always saying to kids, what's your favorite movie? Mm. What do you like about it? You know, what do you like about NFTs? What do you like about crypto?
Mm-hmm. So fun, Brett. Well, thank you so much for your time with us today. We always appreciate it. And so by all means, those listening, check out everything in the show notes, and we'll see you next time for another episode of the Volunteer Youth Worker Podcast.